Welcome to this week's episode of the Violin Podcast, where we interview violinists from around the world. I am your host, Eric Murgal, and I'd like to welcome you to today's episode. If you haven't done so already, if you're new to us, please make sure to hit the subscribe button, hit the bell notifications so that you get notified for when new Violin Podcast episodes come out. It really helps us out to create more amazing content for you. Today's episode is episode 49, and next week's episode will not feature a guest since we'll be celebrating 50 episodes on the Violin Podcast. And I'm excited for this episode because I'm going to be giving away some products on the Violin Podcast website to help you become a better violinist. So please subscribe to the podcast so that way you'll be the first to know regarding these product announcements. We also have a lot of resources on the Violin Podcast show notes, so I want to direct your attention over there because we have a lot of links to a lot of resources, violinpodcast.com. We also have links to various programs and services that we recommend on the Violin Podcast, which may earn a commission at no extra cost to you, but we just wanted to be upfront about that in case you do click on the link. In addition, we also have a YouTube playlist of violin tutorials. So I definitely want to direct your attention there and subscribe to both the Violin Podcast YouTube channel and my personal channel where you can find the latest and greatest on violin news, violin content, and so much more. So if you want to learn the violin or if you're just getting started, I want to help you. So click on those links below, subscribe to those channels so that way you can get the most out of those videos. Okay, let's get into today's episode. My guest today is the administrative director to Jarger Strings in Denmark. His name is Eric Martens. And Eric has generously given his time to me and to us on the Violin Podcast today to talk about Jarger Strings, how it was formed, how Jarger Strings thinks about strings. And this is a really interesting conversation because this is the first person I've talked to from a string company where I can finally pick someone's head and how they evolve string technology and more. So I'm happy to welcome today's guest, Eric Martens. Friends, I have a member of the Jarger Strings team with us on the Violin Podcast, Eric Martens, and he has generously given us his time today to talk about the world of strings. And I'm excited to talk to you today, Eric, because you're the first person on the Violin Podcast who I can finally pick a brain when it comes to the string world. And let's just dive right in. How did you get involved with string making and with Jarger Strings?
Like many other people, a bit by coincidence, you could say. I have a long history in the music business. I've been working in different management positions in the music industry for the last nearly 20 years. And originally, I have a master's degree in musicology and music from musicology and French from University of Copenhagen. So you could say I have a background in music, and I've been playing not bowed instruments, but instruments since I was 6 years old. So I have a very big interest in music creating, you could say everything about music. And this was the background, you could say, I had and used when I started working for Jarger Strings.
That's interesting. For musicology is an interesting topic for anyone who's listening to the Violin Podcast and they're thinking, what the heck is musicology? Musicology is when you're studying about music of the past, when you're trying to find research on a particular composer, a particular genre of music. Was there any specific genre that you were interested back in school, in university, that interests you for musicology, or was it everything?
You would say I listen to pop music, rock music on the radio, but I'm a classical music guy. If you would say when I was a child, you could say my earliest child memory was my father playing classical music on vinyl, and you would say in my childhood we played something, it was classical music. We went to classical musical concerts, so it was mainly the classical music that interested me also when I started at university.
You make a great point because musicology is not just the study of classical music. It could be musicology of pop, of rock, yeah. of
hip hop. It's everything. Yeah. Musicology. We don't want to just like categorize just classical music. It's everything.
You could say when I started to at university in the very early 90s, it was you could say classical music was the main topic. And there was very little about, you could say, these more modern things like blues, rock, pop, whatever. So it was, you could say, mainly classical music and a bit of ethnomusicology, you could say ethnical music and the study of that type of music. But during my time at university, it already started to develop in a different direction where you would say pop, rock, film music became a more important part of the studies, or you were able to choose studying about that. But you could say my main interest has always been classical music. You could say also when I perform myself, it's always classical music. I've never played in a pop band, rock band. Only what was needed at university, we did have something, but it's always been classical music.
Surely, yes. And you said a term, ethnomusicology. Some people on the Violin Podcast who are listening may not know what ethnomusicology is. And ethnomusicology is was popularized by Béla Bartók, and it's the study of folk tunes. And and he was the first person that tried to actually record these folk tunes. And obviously, you can hear that in his music. He tried to use these melodies and songs that were passed down vocally, orally, and he tried to record them. And that's how ethnomusicology kind of became a very niche topic in the world of musicology. So there's musicology, and then there's a sub niche called ethnomusicology for anyone who is interested in learning more about that. Béla Bartók is the person to research. But that's interesting that, you came from a classical music listening household. Were your parents musicians? Is that
You could say I think it's a combination of many things, but it's of course a question of a generation that my father died, but you could say my parents are both in the 80s today, or my father would be and my mother is, and at that time classical music played a more important role. And they also grew up with classical music. So probably something like that. But you could say when in my childhood, my father, he had two different records with non-classical music. It was a Louis Armstrong vinyl and one with Harry Belafonte singing Christmas tunes. Otherwise, you could say only listening to classic music, a lot of opera. My father was a big opera fan, so I kind of inherited that. So I like opera as well, but classic music in general. I'm very, you could say, versatile. I like everything from Baroque to the very modern things. So
classical music in the general sense, very very general sense, people think orchestras, they think violins, violas, cellos, basses, woodwind section, brass section, like the whole thing. That's I feel like the majority of the population think of classical music, the whole orchestra. But people who are listening may not even realize how important a role string companies play in the lives of string players, violins, violas, cellos, basses. And I want us to talk about and dive into the string making process and your involvement in Yargar. So talk to us about the history of Yargar and what your role is in the company.
Yargar Strings was founded in 1956. And it was in fact founded by a Danish cellist called Jarl Hansen, who was a cellist at the Royal Danish Theatre, which is kind of fun fact, it's the oldest still existing orchestra in the world.
Wow, really?
Yeah. So it's fun fact, you could say. But and at that time in the early 50s, he was playing mainly gut strings on his cello, and as you could say, many of the listeners here to the Violin Channel, they might know that you could say gut strings, they're more unstable, they're more unreliable because climate, humidity, very dry climate. have an influence on how the gut strings react. And especially back then, where the string technology wasn't as strong as it is today. And he had this thought, I should be able, or I will invent a set of strings that has many of the same, you could say, qualities from a sound perspective as the gut strings, but I want something more stable. What I've heard from musicians playing together with Jarl Hansen, he died in the early 90s, so I never met him or never knew him. He did a lot of trial and error, testing, making, testing again, and some of it, of course, did sound horrible. but you could say in 1956, he had found a prototype where this is good. This is something I would like to continue with. And then he founded Jaka Strings. And you could say the basic, our basic cello set today, Cello Classic, is the same set as Jarl Hansen invented in the early 50s. And then you could say shortly after he founded the company and starting to produce and manufacture cello strings and sell them, he also developed a violin set, a viola set, and a double bass set. So he had the full range of strings for both instruments. And for, you could say, for quite a few years, this was, the core business for Jaka was the strings that Jarl Hansen invented in the early 50s. And still today, you could say our classic cello A and D, our violin E, our viola A is our best soul strings. And they were, developed in the early 50s.
You know, you're going to have to forgive me for my ignorance, but is there a particular meaning of the word Jargar?
When Jarl Hansen founded the company, he, in the very early beginning, he had a business partner who was called Garfield. So it was the first three letters in his own first name and the first three letters in his business partner's name. So it's J-A-R for Jarl and G-A-R for Garfield.
That's so brilliant. I love that. So you combine both names and you have Jargar.
Yeah. And then, but you could say Garfield Mortensen, he was only part of the business for a very short period. And then he stepped out of the business and Jarl Hansen continued the business on his own.
But still kept a name. And yeah, and I have to tell you, Eric, that I use Jargar strings. I use Jargar E's, like you say, your most popular string for violin, E's. I'm a fan of the Blue Label, the medium tension Jargar. Mm. I love that one. That's my daily driver, so to speak. You know, I always rely on that string to be a really reliable one. And I also tried the Jargar Red Label E string, the high tension, but it just didn't match my instrument. So I always rely on the Jargar, medium tension E string. Gut strings were a big problem, and because of this tuning stability, because you're dealing with lamb gut, sheep gut, and those strings still exist out there. But for the majority of the population, people don't even realize how much string innovation that we've had since the 50s in terms of what kind of metal substances and materials that we use. Can you talk about some of the metals that are involved in the tuning stability and the string making at Jargar without revealing much?
Yeah. When it comes to strings, you could say there are three, four main types of core use in the technology. And it's, you could say, steel core, a solid steel core, which could be, you could say, different surfaces, treated in different ways. You could say we use as a standard either tin-plated steel core. Then there's the synthetic core, which is a relatively modern technology, and which was invented. You would say Thomas Degenfeld in Vienna was one of the first companies to introduce that with the dominance, and that was, you would say it was a revolution for music industry or for the boat instrument industry with the synthetic core, because you had many of the same, you would say, features as you had for gut strings, but you had the stability, you would say, much better tuning stability, playability and easier to play with the synthetic cores. And then, of course, you do use rope cores, but that's mainly for cellos and double basses where you use the rope core technology. And then, of course, the gut strings. But you could say what you could say most of the companies who's producing. You could say steel core, synthetic core strings like we do at Jaga, they don't produce gut strings because it's a totally different technology. It's a different way of especially making the gut core for the strings. You would say the winding process is of course the same, but the you would say the science of creating the gut core is different. And you could say you would say a violin E is of course a steel core, a plain steel core, nothing else, you could say. But when it comes to the lower strings, they are always winded with one or several layers of it, could be round wires, flat wires, but always a flat wire on the top. And when you could say when especially as a violinist, you could say this. Many has experienced the difference of playing with an aluminium wounded string and a silver wounded string, and this is, you could say, part of you, and it's not, you could say, it's not a you could say kind of secret in the business, but you could say with the alu wounded strings, wound strings, you get this, you could say, more mellow, dark, warm sounding. And with the pure silver, you get a much more brilliant sound. But you could say when it comes, you would say when we're talking about flat wires, you would say they are tiny. You would say both in the width and the thickness of the flat wire. But you could say only small differences in the width and the thickness will change mainly the tension of the strings, and therefore it will also change the sound that you hear, both being an audience in the hall, but also under your ear as a player.
This is amazing because I love the idea of every single string company has its own recipe. And clearly Jargar has thought about this. Jargar has their own special recipe to make their sound really unique, but also work for the player. I know in my experience with Jargar strings is that the response of the E string is quite good. I never had a problem with the Jargar E strings like whistling. Usually with gold strings, like gold plated E strings, they tend to whistle even though they have like a mellow sound. But every time I played on Jargar, again, but it's a daily driver, it for me is become a really reliable solution. I want to talk about some of the string technologies that, you know, we've talked about some of the string technologies leading up to where we are now. But is there anything on the horizon that you see? Like, I don't know how much more innovative a string can be, but again, I'm not a head of a string company. Are there any things that you are excited about in the future of string technology?
I think in many ways, you could say all what you can think about have already more or less been invented, you could say. Of course, you can always tweak a little bit. You could say try new materials, but I think you could say most string manufacturing companies, they have, you could say, found the type of materials that they know works well for them. So from you could say from an inventing something completely new, I don't see anything, you would say, in the pipeline right now that we have something totally new and coming up. You would say it's a question of you would say putting the materials that you already know together in different ways, and also of course tweaking and say what would happen if you used a core that is slightly thicker, or we changed the diameter, or you would say the width or the thickness of the flat wire on the top. And of course, also you could say the whole to get this very, very smooth surface that you had you have on the lower violin strings. You grind to some extent. You grind the string, so it feels nice under your finger when you are playing. And of course, the grinding process can also be done in different ways. But basically, I think that it will take a while before we see something completely new that we have never seen before in the string business.
This is totally random, but I'm thinking of the asteroid that's in the sky right now that NASA's trying to ship their rockets to, and they're trying to mine this asteroid for precious rocks and materials. How funny would that be if we can harness some of that, even like a slither of that metal, and have an asteroid coating or asteroid like an asteroid rock in the string. Of course, I don't know how much that would cost, but I can see that being like a potential idea. That would be like a really big breakthrough, but that one E string alone could cost thousands of dollars just to be able to
exactly.
So it's not really a reliable business model in terms of, you know, continuing revenue and people buying your strings more and over. Yeah, that's interesting to know that perspective from head of the string company, for someone who is involved in the string making technology. A lot of it's similar to actually music. A lot of the music that has been composed, it's the same formula. You know, you have the tonic, dominant, tonic, more or less everything. If you're a believer in the Shankarian analysis, whatever comes before five, eventually all things lead to five, the dominant, and eventually happens to tonic. So no matter how much you try to tweak a technology, it's still more or less the same foundation and the core materials that are involved. Maybe there might be slight differences depending on each instrument and each player, but more or less it's pretty much the same. So thank you for sharing your thoughts on that. But I want us to go and transition to the more practical side of strings, because string maintenance is a big topic. How long do strings, or let me rephrase that, how long should strings last depending on how many hours, based on your experience and research at Yargar?
You could say, I think it's a very, you could say there's some basic assumptions you can always say. You could say a good synthetic core violin set, if you are a professional player and or wanting to be a professional player, so you rehearse quite a few hours per day, and you could say string players, they are known for rehearsing like crazy. You could say they rehearse. It's not like a singer, because there's limited time how many hours you can sing per day without damaging your voice. But as a string player, if you have a good technique holding the instrument and a good bowing technique, you could say you could play for 12 hours per day. But you could say, I would say somewhere between 7 to 10, 12 weeks. But of course, it depends. You would say it also depends on how the setup of your instrument. If you have a very tight setup, it might be slightly shorter. And it's also, you would say, some musicians, you would say, when I talk to musicians, some have a very fine ear, where as soon as the string starts to deteriorate just a little bit, they hear the difference in the sound and they want to change the strings right away. And so for some musicians, they're just, okay, I have a slightly different sound way. It sounds slightly different now, but it still sounds good. So I'll keep them on. And it's also, you could say, when you would say, just an example, as far as I've heard, Josh Bell is changing his strings once a week.
I can't imagine what the budget on that is.
And if you and if he's really playing a lot, he's changing the E string even more often. I've heard it, and you will also find that you would say absolute professional players, soloists playing in orchestras, who might only change a few times a year, also from a financial standpoint. But you could say I would ideally, if you're a professional player, you're playing a lot, I would say, yes, 7 to 10 weeks, every 7 to 10 weeks, if you want to continue having the good sound. But sometimes you could say, sometimes you can save a set by changing maybe only the E string, because the moment you put it, you could say, I think you know it yourself, you would say, when you put new strings on your violin, of course, you need some time to play them in, but you get this rush of overtones. And by changing the E string, you get this new rush of overtones that might make the rest of the set last a little longer. Not, you could say, from they're not deteriorated, but you get the sensation of multiple overtones with just putting the new E string on.
I want to circle back on what you said about Joshua Bell. Even if it's true, if it's not, you know, he may be changing strings, you know, once every 2 weeks, or changing E strings pretty much every concert. For soloists, he's probably he has a fixed fee for a performance. So, you know, spending that much on strings is a very tiny percentage of his overall world. So he's probably saying, you're probably thinking, oh my gosh, he's spending thousands of dollars on strings a year. But again, that's a very tiny part of his world. And also, you know, he plays on a Stradivarius, so he needs to maintain the beautiful sounds of that instrument. And yeah, I would say, based on my experience in strings in general, that I would say that's around the same, like 7 to 10 weeks. If there's a period where I'm not playing, 7 to 12 weeks, if I can stretch it a little bit. But I think for me, as a consumer and a player, I think what has helped me keep the longevity of the strings is just to have proper, just make sure you clean them. Make sure you clean them. Make sure you take proper care of them. And not too much rosin built up and everything.
Yeah, and that's of course that is important as well, you could say, and it's a combination, you could say. Many of the Jaga colleagues in the string business, they have, you would say, developed cleaning agents, multiple things, and you could say, if I don't have anything against it, but you could say, in my opinion, the best way to keep your strings good is just having a clean, soft tissue where you, every time you've played and you lay your instrument back in the case, you just wipe them with the dry, soft tissue, and no cleaning agent, because you would say the cleaning agent, it could eventually damage the strings. Because it could some kind of chemical substance, but you could say it's normally some kind of chemical substance, and you never know if it might be developed from one string manufacturer, but you use it on another string manufacturer's strings, and you never know if there would be some kind of substance in this cleaning agent that might damage the construction of the strings you're using it on. And the other thing is that it's very easy to damage the varnish on your instrument, which would be a pity because you would say you would lose some the beauty of the instrument if you do so. But the way you mount your strings to your instrument is also very important. You remember to use graphite in the grooves on the bridge and the upper nut, so the strings glide easily over, and you also take care how you put them into the pegs, you're very careful how you mount the strings, because that has an influence on the lifetime of the strings as well. And very often it's not, you could say, I clearly understand that you could say, oh, I need new strings, or a string is breaking and very fast, I need to put a new one on and blah blah blah, because I need to practice, get on, I have a concert in 2 days, so I need to have time to play them in before the concert or whatever, but that is as important as cleaning the strings. It's also important to mount the strings with care.
I think that's a powerful tip for the audience to really keep in mind is using graphite, using a pencil on the grooves of the nut and the bridge of the violin. I think a lot of students forget that. They forget that really important step because it adds as a lubricant. And just, again, it's part of keeping the longevity of your strings. And that's a tip for any parent who's listening, who is trying to change strings for their child, or for any teacher who just sometimes forgets to do it. It is a very important step. It's very tiny. You can grab a pencil anywhere, but making sure that the graphite is there on both the bridge and the graphite, really important. I do want to, how do you feel about like rosin? Because rosin, I feel like every player has a specific preference when it comes to rosin and string combination. Does Yargar think about that when developing strings or when making strings? I mean, clearly these cello strings have been around since 1956. So I'm sure that the founder has thought about what kind of rosin he uses on his own strings. Are conversations made in the company when it comes to that, or it's not, it's up to the player?
You would say, in fact, it's nothing, you could say it's nothing. You could say we, first of all, we, you could say, I have thought about having a Yargar rosin. You could say that could be designed for a sub brand, or you would say as an overall thing that, that would work for Yargar, but I don't. You could say it's so far. I haven't done anything about it. You could say, and I'm not a rosin maker myself. I don't have the technology, so I would need to buy that from a rosin making company that could be designed something for me. We, you could say, so normally, in fact, I don't recommend any specific rosin to be used to go together with Yargar. Because you could say, like the instrument, like your strings, rosin is also something very personal. In a way, you could say you have maybe used the same rosin for the last, I don't know, 10, 20, 50 years for that sake, and you feel super confident with this type of rosin that you're using, and you feel it's a part of how you play and your playing style. So for me, what my general recommendation is that you use the rosin that you feel good about and you're used to using. Because you could say, I don't have anything specific I can recommend. I don't have, you could say, my own rosin brand. And it's also, and I think when you talk to musicians, there's a lot of them who you would say, I do have a cello myself at home. But I start playing as an adult, and I'm a really lousy cello player. And when I started having classes, you would say the first class I came with, I just bought a cheap Romanian cello and put on, of course, some of my own strings, but still. And then for the first class with my cello teacher, he said, "You need to buy a rosin myself." Yourself, because we, of course, for the first class we used his for the bow, and I said, "What would you recommend?" And he said, "Yeah, I'm always buying the darker ones, and I like this brand." And then I just ordered this online, and this is, you could say, this is what I'm using, and I think it's very often like that. So I think it's important, you would say. And if you're not happy with your rosin, try to experiment a little bit. You would say rosins are not as expensive as strings, so you are able to try different ones.
I appreciate that answer, because some companies who are string companies, they want to they want to have a little bit of market share in all aspects of the music business. Strings, and then rosin, cleaning cloth, string cleaners. But I appreciate your answer, Eric, because you're clearly a string company and you just focus on strings. It's the same thing, like a luthier for a violin may not be the best for a bow maker, or a rosin maker may not be the same as a strings. So I like how Yargar is just dedicated to making the best quality strings and just focuses on that. This has been an amazing time to converse with you. How can people learn more about Yargar Strings?
You can follow us on social media, where you would say all new about Yargar, especially on Facebook and Instagram, is out. We share a lot of videos, different content, and of course there's also our website. And in fact, we are right now in the process of making a new website, and it's ready very, very soon. So that's a possibility as well. And then, of course, if you would say, I get a lot of emails from musicians, violin makers around the world asking me different questions. And that is, of course, also an option to contact us directly and ask the questions that you are interested in.
You could also learn more about Eric on our Violin Podcast website, violinpodcast.com. Click on the show notes link to be redirected to learn more about how you can get in touch with Yargar Strings and Eric directly. Eric, it's been a pleasure. Thanks so much for your time today.
Yeah, you're welcome. It was a pleasure.